You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. From flexible working to paternity leave changes, we've got your HR needs covered. Get expert support at wedo-hr.com.
Good morning, happy Sunday. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every Sunday, I am joined by experts, business leaders, large and small, all across Oxfordshire, who really kindly spend their time to share their stories, their expertise and knowledge with you, the listener. And this Sunday is going to be no different. On today's show, we're actually talking about how the Oxfordshire business can trade overseas, which is a topic we were asked by you, the listener, to put together. And to do that, I'm really, really pleased to be joined by Claire Snowden, who's kindly spent her time to really share some of her expertise over working in this sector. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Claire after this. Get Radio. Welcome back. This is Get Radio and this is the Business Brunch. So before that song, as you heard, today the theme is about how the Oxfordshire business can trade overseas. And to do that, I'm joined by Claire Snowden, who is an international trade expert. So welcome, Claire.
Well, hello, Ben. It's lovely to join you this morning.
Thank you so much. So for those who don't know you in the world of networking circles, can you just give them a little bit of background on you and what you've done over the years?
Absolutely. Well, it's a long story because I have to say I'm in the latter years of life. Having said that, I originally come from Bristol and I started in the textile and fashion arena. So I actually studied as trained or studied as a textile technologist. My very first job was with a fashion company based in Leicestershire. And I worked for them in the technical department. And that's really where my sort of work life and international trade experience started. So when I was working for that brand, part of my role was to support the manufacturing organizations, which at that time were predominantly outside of the UK. So I used to have to travel to those facilities. I then moved and worked for an American corporation, where I was also responsible for originally their technical aspects of their product overseas. And then for 20 years of my career with that large multinational American corporation, I lived and worked overseas in a number of countries. So I started off in Portugal, moved to Israel, then I moved to Sri Lanka, and then finally in Hong Kong. And so all of my 26 plus corporate career was based overseas, working overseas, supporting the businesses and the manufacturing organizations that we were working with. In the latter part of my career, since I've been working in the corporate arena, I moved into supporting small businesses. I started up my own company originally to support businesses with their people movement, their C-suite expertise, helping those individuals to hit the ground running in the new locations, whether they were coming into the UK or whether they were going to go overseas. And I ran that business for a number of years. And then in latter years, I've been supporting SMEs, predominantly in the south of England, and helping them to understand how they can start and how they can grow their businesses and exports in different countries that they might want to engage with to sell more of their products or services. Having said that, I do specialize in a number of areas. One is I specialize in product. So normally I sit very well with a company that's got something tangible to sell or deliver to their customers. I work with both B2B and B2C, so business to consumer and business to business. I have a particular interest in family businesses, sustainability, the green agenda, and I'm particularly interested in helping fashion and small textile companies with their growth because of my background.
Amazing, brilliant, really, really good comprehensive overview and lots of things to work on there. So thank you for that. But before we go into the roundtable conversation, the most difficult question of in my experience of hosting this show is always a song choice. It always challenges you to pick a song on the radio. But you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
Yes, I have. And yes, the song is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. The backstory to the song and the reason for me choosing it is actually it was the big hit of 1991. And 1991 is when I first went to live and work overseas. That was my first overseas post when I landed in Portugal. And that was the big hit of the time. And yeah, I love that song to today. It's great to see the regeneration of that song as well in latter years with the Queen movie. So that's my song choice.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. Today, we are going to be talking about how the Oxfordshire business can trade overseas. And to do that, we're joined by Claire Snowden, who's kindly spent her time to just share some insight and expertise with you over lots of expertise that she's built up, as we heard in her intro. So, Claire, I'm going to start with a really, really big, I guess, kind of opening question, if that's okay with you. What are the things to consider? So if you're the Oxfordshire SME who is trading X product or X service, and you really want to consider trading overseas, what are maybe some of those early things that you should ask yourself or consider, but I guess before pressing the button?
Yes, that's a really good question. And that's the the million-dollar question as well. I do think that there are a number of considerations and they are endless and they are continuing when you trade internationally. But I have to say, I think the most important one is to have an understanding of the reason why you think you want to start to expand your business by sales in other countries. Sometimes it's a natural occurrence and it starts from the inception of the business. But let's say more generally, the types of businesses that we support have started as a UK business. They're quite UK centric. They've been selling to UK customers. And then they either get approached by a potential customer overseas or they suddenly are looking at their numbers and thinking of expanding. One of the most important things, and it might be something that isn't necessarily connected to talking about international trade, but it's very important for the listeners to understand, is that you need to have a really good reason. Have you really exhausted? What is your reason for wanting to expand internationally about? Is it about the fact that you want to grow the business and you're looking for new markets? The first question I would always ask would be, well, have you really exhausted the UK market? Because it's always easier to do business at home. Now, in some cases, the answer will be yes, we've pretty much covered the whole UK market. We're now ripe and ready to go overseas. Or the answer might be no, we haven't, and therefore we'll take some more time about our considerations. But whichever one is the answer, it's a really good basis to start with what the reason for going international, the reason for wanting to export. And that then starts to drive other questions. Where should those locations be? Where might our product be best served or service be best served? Perhaps we already have experience of one instance where we've sold a product or a service, and so we can piggyback off that knowledge and intelligence. Or is it that we have some expertise in-house? Do we have some language skills? Perhaps the owner or somebody working in the business themselves has a language skill, or perhaps somebody that is in the business or comes to the business has experience of a particular country because they've worked there before. These are all considerations that feed in to the decision making for where we're going to export, in addition to all the market research and the intelligence that you would have to do to research the market, both through the data and also through anecdotally through perhaps your customer base. There's different ways of doing research. You can do desk research, you can do face-to-face in-market research. It's about gathering that intelligence to really pin down Is this the right market for us? Is this the right location? Do we have the resources that we need? Do we have an understanding, therefore, of that location in terms of the rules and regulations? Would there be some kind of trading regulation? Perhaps there's a duty or a customs requirement that we can or can't meet. You then start to get into the meat of choosing the countries that make sense to you as a business based upon some of those criteria I've mentioned and perhaps others. And then once you've made that decision, you might end up with a list of one, two or three countries. And then it's a case of looking at all the fundamentals and the research around those locations and understanding, does this now make sense? And looking at the bottom line, what's the costing? What's the potential profit margin? And is this the right country for us? You may find that there's a regulation or a rule that prevents you from selling your product or service in that location, or it might be that the customer base in that location really isn't the right customer base and they're not actually going to be attracted to your product or service. So it's a bit of a pathway. It can take a long time, but we do find that lots of businesses normally start from the point of, well, we've shipped this product once to country X, it kind of worked, so we're thinking that's what we should do more of. That's a good starting point, and sometimes the research and the supporting intelligence supports that that's the right country, but sometimes it's important to know that actually it might not be and there might be other better opportunities. Therefore, market research for which are the right markets for you is of vital importance.
No, really, really good starting point. I think one of the things that I've remembered you saying a couple of times, but when we've met at networking events, albeit a little while ago now, is probably more about kind of the softer side of things. So in terms of like cultural differences and sure, understanding in certain countries, it's actually really polite to do X. And in certain countries, that same thing is actually really offensive and is going to put people off your product. Can you just share that piece? And really, other than working with somebody like yourself, like what can you really kind of do to understand the cultural thing? And how important is that?
Well, culture is vitally important. It's important in terms of how you communicate with your potential customers. And it's important for your online presence, for example. So there might be cultural differences that impact your product or service. They might relate into colours. For example, some colours that sit well in a particular country and culture, and other colours that aren't acceptable. In some colours, for example, white is the colour that symbolises is death, so not necessarily the right colour. And in some countries, other colours are offensive or are very valuable colours. So there's definitely the whole world of colours, but also the world of language. So when you're communicating about your product or service to an individual overseas, whether that be face-to-face, whether that be through your website or through social media, it's important to understand the receiving person of that information, whether you've got somebody that's interested in your products and service going to your website, or whether you're trying to attract people through a search engine. Both require that you investigate and understand the language and the cultural implications. Cultural implications can relate to the translation or the language of that you're representing in that world of website or social media, but it can also be in terms of the actual product or service that you're selling. There may be some things that are and aren't acceptable, and so the research that's required is around those areas. Sometimes you have that inbuilt knowledge within your organization. Sometimes you can engage other individuals. There are trainers out there with experience of particular cultures and particular locations. And there's also a lot of online resource. Now, when we come into the technicality of websites and social media, if you imagine as a British or a UK customer, when you go to a website, you want to feel that the website's talking to you, whether it's a product or a service. You want to feel that they understand your need or your problems or your issues. And that comes through you being able to read the language that's on the screen, but also it comes through search engines. So for example, if you want your website to be found in a particular country that speaks a different language, then it's important for your website to reflect that language, not only for the customer that's coming to your website, but also for the search engine itself, for it to be able to serve up your information to that potential customer. There's also the considerations around if you're engaging with those individuals or those customers or even suppliers, that there's an expectation that you would be able to communicate with them and understand their difficulties and their needs. The other side of this would come on payment terms. So for example, if you're a customer or an individual in a different country from the UK or from England, you would have an expectation that not only would you understand the information about the product or service you want to buy, but also that you can buy that easily. So is the navigation on that website easy to follow? And can I buy in my own currency? Because as is the case, if you or I perhaps go to a website, certainly it applies to me. If I go to a website, happen to be in a website in a foreign country, and they'll only take a particular currency, then it might prevent me from buying that product. Whereas on my own language website and on my own on a website that has my own currency, I'm therefore able to purchase or deal with that product. So it's really important to understand these cultural implications through language, through the actual culture of the location that you're selling to, whether that be in terms of language or in terms of cultural norms, whether that be in terms of things like cultural symbols or cultural colors, and also making it easy for your international customer to do business with you through making easy transactions. The same way that we expect that, you know, in the UK, we would want that if we were another customer in another location.
No, really, really good advice. Really, really good insight already, Claire. Thank you for that. Let's go to a song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is The Business Brunch, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back. This is The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're talking how you, the Oxfordshire business, can trade overseas. And to do that, we're joined by an international trade expert, Claire Snowden. So really enjoying this conversation. So Claire, we've talked a little bit about the first things to consider, whether you indeed even explore taking your business overseas. And then we've spoken a little bit about what to expect if you're doing it. And then we've also talked a little bit about kind of the cultural side of things as well. So now let's talk a little bit about really kind of probably the logistical side of things, because I think that there's probably the part in terms of, do you have a product that, as we've touched on, do you have a product that is attractive overseas? So I'm a massive Oxford United fan. I knew I'd get that in there at some point. And Oxford United shirts could theoretically be sold overseas, but I imagine, as much as it pains me to say this, I imagine Manchester United shirts may be more popular in Hong Kong than Oxford United shirts. I might be wrong. But I guess off the back of that, it is also about getting your product there. And actually, it's in Oxfordshire, you'll really know how to get that product dispatched, fulfilled. You'll know about delivery rules. But actually, in terms of taking that product to Hong Kong as a really great example, How do you really kind of keep control of that? Is it best to and I appreciate there may not be a one size fits all, to dip your toe in and use that third party provider, even if it is costing you a little bit more to start with? Are you best setting up your own channel so you've got your own support? Like what are the things to consider under, I guess, the real distribution piece and all the fulfillment piece?
Sure. So in relationship to the Oxford United shirt, I think if it was an Oxford University shirt, I think that you potentially got some takers there, because it's you know, it's a brand that's known worldwide and related to the higher echelons of the world of academia. So I do think that particular branding does sell. So possibly you could sell that online in Hong Kong, and it might sell quite well. But anyway, on the other part of your question about the logistics and the fundamentals of getting your product to your customers, there's so many answers to that. The first thing is, what are you actually trying to achieve? Are you selling B2C, business to consumer, or D2C, as some people call it, direct to consumer, or are you selling B2B, business to business? And that has an implication on the route to market. So if you're selling B2C or direct to consumer using online through a website or through social media, then there's a slightly different pathway than if you were doing that as B2B. Having said that, you've also got all the costing considerations around, are you able to deliver your product by vessel, which is potentially more cost effective than perhaps delivering by air. But you know, does your market warrant or support faster or slower deliveries? So there's lots of fundamental questions around the process that you follow, but in general they all have their potential tariff and customs and logistical requirements, and there are different places and ways to find out those types of information. So for example, if you are wanting to understand the potential costs around the duty and the VAT, for example, of sending your product from Oxford to country X, let's use Hong Kong as an example, then there is a government website that you go to, and it's a place where you fill in all your relevant information about your product, and it will start to tell you things about the trade agreement, whether we have a trade agreement with that particular country, whether we have preferential duty status or most favored nation duty status, and what the VAT implications might be for your particular product. So that's a place where you can go and find out that information. But the way to find out that information is that you need to have your tariff codes. So your tariff codes are the descriptors, or the what some people might know of as HS codes. You need to know what the code is for your particular product. So for example, a t-shirt, a cotton t-shirt might have a tariff code. Another type of item, for example, a plate would have another HS code. And those codes are the identifier of the product, and they then start you on your journey for understanding what the duties and the VAT rates might be. So there's a whole area of cost, not only your logistical costs of actually shipping the product or airing the product, but also the costs of the duty and the VAT implications. And that's where the whole world of free trade agreements and MOUs come into play. And that's what the government does for us in terms of negotiations with other countries. So, for example, we've just brought the Australia Free Trade Agreement, and we also have it's approved the CTPPT Act with Japan that's about to be signed off by Parliament. So there's lots of things that you'll have to consider. And sometimes when you start to do your due diligence on duty rates and VAT codes and looking at other countries that you might want to deliver your product to, you might actually start to come across some trade agreements or some mechanisms that actually make it quite worthwhile you focusing on one product versus another, for example. also in relationship to the logistics, you've got the actual documentation side. So, you know, how do you pack your product? What kind of labeling do you have to put on it for particular countries? There might be rules and regulations around that, but also the packaging of the product, and also the actual documentation. So when you deliver or ship a product or air a product to a particular country, it goes with a lot of documentation. So there's what they call export documents. Sometimes you need to have proof of origin. Sometimes you need to have test results for the product you're sending, etc. And those documentations are quite can be quite complex and require somebody with some knowledge and skills. So there's a number of ways that you can do that. If you're a small individual trader and you perhaps don't have any staff, or you have limited staff and limited resources, then you could reach out to organizations like the Department for Business and Trade. We've got the Thames Valley Chamber of Commerce, and also the Institute of Export and International Trade. Now, if you Google any of those, or you search engine on the website, any of those organizations, you can start to look at their support and their expertise and their knowledge and their services around how to export your product or service from the UK to another country. There are also individual experts within the field that you can engage that might have skills and expertise in particular areas. So you might have an individual that's highly experienced in the shipping and the logistics, how you get your products to market, or you might find somebody that's an expert in free trade agreements, duty and VAT rates, and also in terms of HS codes. There are people out there that will do research. I mean, the good news is that the government website, Department for Business and Trade, actually does have some really useful tools. So there's a tool on there where you can investigate your HS code. It's a way that you can work out what the code is for your particular product. And if you're not sure, there's also an opportunity for you to use a tool that where you can apply for them to tell you what the code is for a particular product. That can either be a binding document or a non-binding document. To have a binding document, I think that lasts for a year, where they tell you what the code is. That's a paid for service, but some of the other services are free. So there is a lot of support out there. But I would say that one of the most important things, I think, that an individual or a company can do when they're wanting to grow, start by growing internationally or increase their exports, is to talk to their peers, so peer-to-peer networks, and also to talk to customers. So if they've already had a few customers, they should interrogate those customers or interview to find out everything that customer knows. What were the keywords that they perhaps put into the search engine to find that your product, or why did they buy your product over perhaps a local choice? Was it to do with price, or was it to do with design, or was it to do with some other reason? So there's lots of ways that you can gather market intelligence around your particular product, through customers or potential customers, and through the peer-to-peer network. And one of the most valuable resources is to speak to someone who's been there and done that. You know, if you've got somebody that you know has exported, sometimes difficult to talk to somebody that's perhaps in the same industry as you, or perhaps selling the same product, because you might be concerned about intellectual property and those types of areas, or you just might be concerned about them knowing the insights of your product or your business or your service. Peer-to-peer with somebody that's perhaps not selling or doing the same type of business that you're doing, just for their understanding about the life of being an exporter. And you then start to gather a lot of intelligence just through conversation. And then I think the final point I'd have to say on that is network. So network within networking groups, or attend events, or network where you know people are going to be, that link into the world of export. So if there's something up to do with logistics, for example, a logistics event, or if there's something to do with a particular country, it's about market intelligence for that country. Or if you know somebody in your network is potentially going to an event that has a tentative link to export, to network in those areas and with those people and just start to gather as much knowledge and intelligence as you can. And every time you talk to them, you'll be picking up things like keywords, key phrases, things like, there's this wonderful service provider that we used, or there's this amazing free trade agreement that we've utilized in this country, or we had problems with packaging, but we used this company and they were really great, helped us to reduce our packaging. Or we're really interested in making sure that we are reducing our carbon footprint. So where can we go to help people to support our business, because we do want to export, but we don't want to increase our carbon footprints. There's lots of knowledgeable places to go and individuals. And I have to say, Oxfordshire in itself is a very vibrant community. And you're what is it they say, 6 or 7 steps away from the individual you're looking for, or the knowledge you're looking for within your network. So definitely you will find that exporters are good networkers, and that's helped them to get where they are.
Amazing. No, really good insight. Thank you for that. It's time for another song. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today we're joined by Claire Snowden to talk about international trade and really how you, the Oxfordshire business, can potentially trade internationally, or certainly things to consider. And we've covered a lot already. As we come into kind of the final stint of the show, I really want to almost kind of go on a little bit of a negative note, if that's okay, and really kind of fly through maybe some things that you should consider. I guess kind of the things to be aware of, or the don'ts, or the, I guess kind of the obvious hurdles that I think maybe you should avoid. And I appreciate we did touch on a few of those in the kind of the first section. But yeah, what are the things that I guess you should be aware of, and what are the big, I guess, kind of risks of trading internationally?
There are so many areas of potential risk, and I think, just in general, and perhaps I didn't, well, I'm pretty sure I didn't mention it earlier, but one of the areas that you should look into and research as part of your due diligence when you're looking at which market sector and what's my route to market going to be is your risk assessment. Mm. So risk assessment can relate to so many areas. You know, are you risking finance? Are you risking people if you're sending someone to a location that might not be as secure in terms of its political stability, for example. So there's many dangers just by nature of going outside of the UK, and part of that is the unknown. Some of the issues that have come to me over the years have related to incorrect documentation where your products got stuck in the port. And that's really just because the documentation that you've completed is the responsibility of the person that owns the goods before they go into free circulation. They're responsible for the right documentation. So those documents can really cause great problems if your product gets stopped at a port or an airport, and then you've promised a customer that they'll have those goods for a particular date. So that can have such far-reaching consequences. It might be cancellation of goods. It might be, that they want the goods at a discount, for example. There's also world events. And I, having lived and worked in the countries I mentioned earlier, but just to recap for those that perhaps didn't hear, Portugal, Israel, Sri Lanka, and Hong Kong. Well, certainly, I have tales to tell from both Israel and Sri Lanka, having been living there when various world events have happened, which can have great effects on the movement of goods and on trade in general, whether that be that you have an overthrow of a government, so it goes into free fall and you can't move anything in or out of the country. In Sri Lanka, we had the central bank bombing when you couldn't get down to the port because the country was on lockdown. We've had situations where countries have run out of money, and so Lloyd's have no longer been able to support the movement of the, or to ensure the movement of goods. These, I have to say, are rare occurrences. I don't want to put all your listeners off and think that these are going to happen, you know, every day, because clearly they don't. But these are the kinds of areas that you can get into with international trade. The more subtle ones and the more everyday ones, as I say, are around documentation. We have had vessels as well. We've had product fall off vessels, actually. That's another interesting story for another time. But in terms of risk assessment, it's important to assess not only whether your product is fit for market. For example, if there are rules and regulations around the testing of your product, what you don't want is to find that you are sued by a potential customer in a country. So you do need to do all your due diligence and risk assessment on the efficacy of your product, and that you're following all the rules and regulations of the country. But also the risk assessment for getting your goods there, which I touched on a little bit just now with some of the stories. And then also the potential risk for the return of goods. What will your return policy and what will your return process look like? You don't want to have all your goods in a country and then not have a way for them to be returned. So you're basically losing money if you've got no solution. So it's really thinking around all the potential market solutions and what those might mean in terms of risk. And then you've got the whole legal implications, the legal risk implications, and you've also got the financial risk implications. So when you get into the world of international trade, you have to start to think about, are you covered legally? Have you met the right legal requirements for that product or that transaction? And also in terms of the monetary transaction, are you going to get paid? So what kind of payment terms are you going to have? You know, it can't just be on trust that you deliver the goods and you hope to get paid at the end of it. So you need to be very clear on your payment terms and the potential for risk in those areas. And also, you'll get into currency. In many cases, there'll be a currency requirement. So, you know, we've come across exporters in the past who've done a great job, sold their product, got some wonderful sales in a country. But then when they start to really do the research or recap research on their sales, they realize they've made no money. In fact, they've made a loss because they haven't included all the potential costs. So there is a potential cost related to FX or financial exchange if you're selling in one currency, then bringing it back into the UK in another. So that's a whole world that raises its head when you start to trade internationally. The good news is there's lots of financial institutions out there. My job has never been to promote one over the other, but certainly some are more expensive than the others. But there are experts out there, FX experts, financial exchange organizations that can really help you to guide your path. And again, peer-to-peer networks, people who've been there and done that and have experience is always a good intelligence for you to have in through your network.
Absolutely. No, really, really good advice there. Thank you. We are almost out of time. Like, we've literally got seconds left. So I guess probably in a sentence at most, If you were to kind of focus on one point that's been covered today, or a fresh point, just, I guess, kind of a top tip for the listeners to kind of bear in mind, what would be, I guess, kind of your takeaway tip?
For someone thinking of exporting?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think the number one tip is do your research.
Perfect. Amazing. Brilliant. What a way to end the show. So thank you, Claire, for your time and contribution to the discussion. It really, one of the things I think we say a lot about the show is bring your notepad because you're going to need it. And today's show certainly has been filled with tips. So thank you for that. We are going to be back next week with brand new guests discussing topics that are going to impact you, the Oxfordshire business. So really look forward to that. Finally, just a reminder that you can listen to this radio show on the radio and online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version, which is available via podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms and released on the Monday. And then there is also a video format, which is released on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, whatever you're doing in this wonderful county, and we will see you again next week.